Welcome to another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sadie Klein. There's no stopping consummate artist Lorraine Rodriguez Reyes, and that's a good thing. The actress-producer has appeared on stage, television, and film, a career that's taken her from Manhattan's Cherry Lane Theater to the HBO mega-hit The Sopranos, to the movie Taught to Hate, which was part of the HBO International Latino Film Festival. Some of Lorraine's producer credits include A Shift in Gravity, featuring Golden Globe and Emmy Award winner S. Apatha Murkison of Law and Order, and Perry Gilpin of Frasier fame. Also in Manhattan at the Cherry Lane Theater, Lorraine produced the Stripped Festival in association with Barefoot Theater Company and East Third Productions. She produced the award-winning short films Tapeworm and Kapaku. Then there's Mommy Confessions, which marries both her talents. Actually, this one-woman show focuses on more than one woman and was born out of her first pregnancy. Lorraine says she loved the experience, wanted to share it, and wanted to hear other women's stories. So she wound up interviewing a whole host of women, 15 of whom she channels on stage. Lorraine is also one of the producers of the feature film Eli Moran. Lorraine got her MFA from Harvard's American Repertory Theater, Moscow Art Theater Institute for Advanced Theater Training. So, Lorraine, welcome, and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start first with this. Harvard and the Moscow Art Theater Institute. How can you say both of those names in the same sentence?
Well, they're actually the same in one. Harvard has a program with the Moscow Art Theater School in Moscow, Russia. And when you do your MFA, basically you spend one semester in Moscow, and they also have the professors from Moscow come and teach you at Harvard.
So you lived in Moscow.
Yes.
This New Yorker from the Bronx went to Moscow. How did that work out for you?
It was very interesting. It was fun. It was cold, and they thought I was Chechenian. Most of the time, I was receiving some type of racial slurs that I quite didn't understand.
Why did they think you were from Chechnya?
My dark hair. Apparently, everybody in Moscow is very fair, blonde hair, blue eyes, and I have very dark features. So they assumed immediately I was from Chechnya.
Okay, because you couldn't be possibly from anywhere else, correct?
Not at all. But the funny thing is that I actually found the salsa scene there, and I danced more in Moscow than I did in New York.
Oh, that's crazy. So how did you wind up at Harvard? Did you always know that you wanted to be an actress?
I did. I started when I was about 16. And
started what?
Kind of percolating to be an artist. I knew I wanted to be something in the arts, wasn't quite sure. And since I wasn't around anyone who really was an artist, there was no guidance.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of fly by the night, figure it out yourself. And when I was applying for undergrad, I went in under theatrical arts and theater arts, acting. And I told my mom, it's okay, I'm going to switch to poli sci. I'm going to be an attorney. And, you know, let's just get in under the arts. I never changed majors.
Where did you go to undergraduate school?
SUNY New Paltz.
That's the State University of New York in upstate New York. And you majored in acting.
I did, and Spanish.
And how did that work out for you?
Wonderful. I loved it. I loved the entire university experience. It took me out of the Bronx. It broadened my horizons. And through them, I actually studied abroad in Spain. That was my first trip to Europe. And I backpacked and met wonderful people and kind of developed this hunger of travel.
So you were your own boss. You just did what you wanted to do. And you kind of discovered your own self without somebody telling you what to do.
Yes.
And so you majored in acting at SUNY New Paltz, mm-hmm. and obviously encouraged by your professors who spotted talent in you?
Yes, I had a wonderful professor, Beverly Brum, who just passed away. She had immense faith in me.
And she was kind of a mentor to you?
Always. Her and Joseph Paperone.
Did you go to Harvard right after undergraduate school?
I tried to dissect the artist out of me because it wasn't accepted.
What does that mean?
Meaning that as an artist, you can't make a living. How, you know, you don't have a pension. You don't have a 401k. Are you going to survive?
Well, didn't you become a waitress?
No, not at all. I became a Board of Ed teacher for the third grade.
So you got a teaching certificate.
In New York at the time, there was a shortage of teachers. So you can get your certification through the Board of Ed, a license,
mm-hmm.
a PPT license, I think they called it at the time. And then you had to take a teaching credits for master's program once a year.
So what did you have to do? You had to put your passion on the back burner?
Yes.
And earn a living?
It only lasted about a semester.
You taught for a semester?
Yes.
I think I'm having a little trouble trying to follow you. So you got your teaching certificate. You taught for 20 minutes.
I basically taught for 20 minutes. I hit January. I was having nervous breakdowns because as an actor, you're so emotional and you're so connected. And I was so connected to my 30 students and their families and their issues and what came along with it that I was coming home and bringing my work home with me.
I see.
And I, at one point, I told my mother, I think I'm adopting all of them. I cannot deal with this. It's like their parents are Horatius. So they're not doing what they need to do. And my mom
turned around. You're going to save the world, or at least your students.
My students. Yeah. And my mother turned around and she says, this job is going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
I suggest you let it go. And I quit not having another job, having rent to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Decided on backstage that I was going to apply for a teaching artist position. And I became a teaching artist for 21st Century.
What's 21st Century?
It's a grant that they give, and you go into the public school systems and you teach conflict resolution through the arts.
That's terrific.
Yes. So I taught twice a week after school for about junior high school. So they were about junior high in Harlem. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. And then, of course, you know, I started bartending on the side with that. And I hit 25 years old, and that wall was, is this going to be my life? What am I doing with myself? And I had a hard conversation with myself. In the time being, I was, I produced a short film, Capicu, that went to Cuba. And I thought, I can do this. I can do this. So maybe I should think about entertainment law.
Well, wait a minute. How do you produce a short film when you have never produced anything before?
Because I auditioned for it as an actor. And
so you were going on auditions while you were doing...
Oh, yes. Always... Once I quit teaching, a good friend of mine from college said to me, you never gave it a chance. So why are you going to quit before giving it a chance?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, you're right. Let me put fear on the back burner and just haul through. And I started auditioning. I got my headshots done, hitting the pavement hard, eating peanut butter jelly sandwiches forever. And
no agent?
No agent.
So all on your own?
All on my own. Taking classes, paying my classes in installments, doing things through backstage. And I auditioned for a short called Capicu. And I thought, oh, I'm sure to get it. I had a phenomenal audition. And the producer called me. She goes, I voted for you, but there's two producers. And they didn't feel that you were raw enough because they really wanted someone who really came from the streets, in a sense. And not that the actress who got it did, but she just had that raw quality where
it's always so subjective.
Yes, it is.
You can't get everything.
And she told him, she's like, but she's great. She's malleable. She's educated. And the producer was very excited at the fact that I came from the Bronx and I had this education. And she said to me, I can't hire you as an actor, but I can give you another gift. I'll train you as a producer.
Oh.
And so she brought me on as an associate producer for Capicu and trained me. Her name is Lisey Ramos. And I have to thank her because through that, it opened another door. And I saw that I had other talents besides acting. And there's more to this industry than just an actor, stage manager, lighting.
And so you have this experience.
So I had that experience with the movie. I went to Cuba.
To film it?
No, we actually were accepted into the International Havana Film Festival. And we went there and I did that for 2 weeks.
Promoting the film?
Promoting the film, being there because in order, you know, it's kind of like audience awards again, even though they're voting for you. And so I started putting together like domino tournaments, everything dealing around dominoes.
Well, what's the movie about?
Capicu's basically, it's a coming of age movie, two young lovebirds, and it revolves around the game of dominoes. So all these conversations about life happen around this one game of dominoes.
Now, did it go to Cuba because dominoes is a popular game in Cuba?
Well, it's popular in the Caribbean.
Okay.
But I think they just like this
story. And also
story.
In parks in New York City.
Yes. We actually shot at Washington Square Park. And it was a lovely experience. A good friend of mine passed away on that trip. And I came back and I said, I have to make a decision. What am I doing with my life?
And so that was a turning point, a seminal moment in your life.
Yes.
And then you just started really, hitting the pavement in a different way or with a different determination?
I basically said it's either acting or entertainment law so then I can really go into producing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said I'm going to apply. I had Columbia, Yale, Harvard. And I looked at all their programs. Columbia had a great producing program. And as does Yale's fantastic across the board.
School of Drama.
Yes. And a good friend of mine said, you have youth on your side. I would suggest going for acting first. If you don't get in, then go for law. And I thought, I'm not doing these rounds because you can do rounds for years. I have friends who have auditioned for all these schools for 4 or 5 years before they get accepted. And so I picked the American Repertory Theater at Harvard University because they have a great program. Scott Ziegler was there, Nancy Holfeck, and Robert Woodruff. And they also had Moscow. And that kind of enticed me. The Moscow okay. theater training program.
Yeah.
I get to go to Russia.
Yeah, yay. Wow. I won the lottery. Uh-huh. And yes. So you obviously got in.
I got in and I auditioned for Yale. Those were the only two. Mm-hmm. And I got in and that kind of...
So that set you on the path.
That set me on a different path completely.
And so you graduate, you get your MFA, and now what do you do?
I hit the pavement.
Again.
This time around, I have agents because of grad school.
Right. Well, because of the street cred of Harvard.
Completely.
Yes.
And I'm also more prepared. There's more confidence to me. I'm not the girl from the Bronx who's feeling misplaced. And it's one of those moments where you know when to throw out the H-bomb, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. when people want to be very not nice.
Yes, yes.
You also, with the training, there's also a confidence that comes along with that. And then you have their networks, which is great. I joined the Harvard Club. I met a couple of people there. I just really started learning that networking was a part of the game. It's not only the talent. It's who you know, who can push you in, who can bring you. Because sometimes the jobs that I've gotten in the past weren't because of my agents. It was really because I met you. We had a lovely conversation. We touched base.
I was smitten, and I thought, I've got something for her.
Exactly. And that brought me along. And through that, I ended up working with East Third Productions as a managing director and then a producer for a while because of my Harvard
East Third Productions is a theatrical group
it
in
was,
New York
yes.
City.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Lorraine Rodriguez-Reyes, who is an actress and a producer. Talk to me about the fact that you're an actress and you're Latina. Does that work for or against you?
I used to think it worked against me, but I changed my way of thinking. And I basically said, okay, if you want me to play these roles, great. I'll play them. I'll do them all. I'll be the stereotype that you want. Because then I will get paid. Mm-hmm. And then I can do the things that I really find prolific and exciting to do. And then that way I can slowly break the mold.
So where was versatility early on in your career? Didn't exist?
Not really.
Yeah.
At first, I fought it. It's like, why aren't you sending me in for Chekhov? I want to do Chekhov.
And I was in Moscow. I mean, obviously, like, I should be doing Chekhov.
And I remember my first experience with Chekhov after grad school. A fabulous director, James Dacre, at Columbia, hired me to play Irina. And an actress there goes, oh, please, give me a break. Like, you can play Chekhov.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, that's a stab. That hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that part of me where I become very competitive, and it's, I'll show you. Yes, I can
and you
play
did.
Arena. Yes.
And you did show them. So what was the process like for you? Kind of take us through your career, and how'd you get on The Sopranos? How'd you get in movies?
That was, The Sopranos was with my agents at the time, Nickelodeon and Company. I had an under five in the last, one of the last episodes, when it was coming to an end, the Blue Comet episode.
Under five means under five lines?
Under five lines. Mm-hmm. So it's very small.
Okay.
It's minute. You blink, you miss me. Turns out that that was my first experience with the editing room floor on what happens. And as we were watching it, and I'm saying, wow, I was there when they filmed this, and that wasn't there, and this wasn't there, and I'm seeing new things, and I just knew. It's like they cut me out. And that was a point where it's the beginning of my career after grad school.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my whole family, and I'm just like, I'm on The Sopranos.
Yeah, really?
I cried that night like I was mourning someone.
Well, the other part of it is you got paid.
That's what my agent said. I called him, and it's like, they
Well, that's because
me.
Your agent got paid.
Yeah. He's like, you got paid too hard. It happens all the time. Get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, all right. So a lot of my work came through my agents at that time. I was doing a lot of theater. I still do a lot of theater. It's my passion. And slowly but surely, I got married. Life changed. I am no longer with the agents I was at that time. I'm still with Abrams Artists commercially here in New York, and in Atlanta, I'm with Atlanta Models and Talent. But you have different paths, and sometimes they have a different idea for your career than you have. And I wanted to start a family. And so I kind of not took a break, maybe acting-wise a little bit, but not producing.
Mm-hmm.
And I started a family. I had my first son, Marcus Joaquin, in 2011. And through that experience, I remember telling my husband, it's like, you know, when I was at Harvard, I used to write. I think I was considered like the first blogger because it was a while ago. So I would send these mass emails. And my mom used to always tell me, you have to do something with all these emails. You have to make a show. And it's like, I thought, oh, it's kind of self-indulgent. It's like, oh, who wants to hear about all these crazy stories? It's fun to read for the family, for mm-hmm. us to keep in touch,
mm-hmm.
but to see it on stage. And then I had that same feeling when I was pregnant and I would write random notes to people. It's like, oh, this is what I feel. This is what I witnessed today. And a good friend of mine who's actually a playwright, Carmen Rivera, says, you have such an interesting point of view of life. She says, I think you should write. And so slowly I started writing all of my experiences. I've always journaled, so it was kind of easy.
Writing your experiences about your pregnancy.
About my pregnancy and what I was experiencing, because you kind of get this bionic nose all of a sudden, and it's like these putrid smells of New York City that I've never smelled before. Now that I'm pregnant, I'm smelling.
Right.
And then the experiences with the culture of New York City and being pregnant and...
how people perceive you or treat you.
Treat you, perceive you, work-wise, friend-wise.
Well, clearly, are you getting much work as a pregnant woman?
I actually got a lot of work being pregnant. My son brought me so much work.
In front
I
of
ended
the camera,
up booking like five roles with What Would You Do? They didn't know I was pregnant.
Oh, that's
at the
a
time.
Television show,
yes,
right? On ABC.
On
right?
ABC, and that was through my manager, Henry Ravello.
Uh huh.
And I've been with them. I've done 14 episodes, about maybe more. And that kind of really started. I had my first one in 2006 when I came out of grad school, but that was the other time where you learn they shelf some of these videos. Mm-hmm. And I've been with them since then. So we're in 2014. I shot my last episode with them last fall.
In case people don't know what the premise of the show is, explain what...
What Would You Do is an ethical series on ABC, as they say, with John Quiñones. And they basically create these synopses, and they take them from news.
Right, a situation.
A situation, and they recreate it with an actor who plays the aggressor or... the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And then they set a couple of marks there just to kind of catapult the audience's reaction or the bystanders. And then you have, as I like to say, people who aren't artists, I call them civilians.
Right.
So then you have the civilians.
Watch this unfold
and get involved.
Right. And it could be somebody yelling at a child.
Yes,
it could be leaving somebody, a baby in a stroller and walking away,
exactly.
Whatever.
Uh-huh. So I've had a myriad of roles there. So I wouldn't say it's quite a recurring because it's not like the same character. I come back as different characters, mm-hmm. but it's a great improv class.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, I think, helped me as a New Yorker not to put my blinders on so much. Where normally as a New Yorker, I kind of just stay in my own world. It's mind your business. That's what you're taught all your life.
Right, right.
It's none of your concern if it doesn't affect you. And now I kind of just take it off. It's like, sometimes I'll say something and sometimes my mother looks at me. She's like, really, you have two children. Do not get involved.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. So move us now to Mommy Confessions. You're pregnant. You're feeling weird. You're feeling good. Whatever it is.
I thought I could be a surrogate with my first.
So what was it that prompted you to talk to other women?
Two things prompted it. The first one, I thought it was all fabulous and fantastic with
being pregnant.
Like, mm-hmm. I thought everyone had this experience. Shortly after my son was born, I booked a play called Glass Cord.
As a producer?
As an actress. And the playwright, Evelyn, said some of these, this is based on true stories. And the character I played, the mother, just had this innate, almost disdain for her child. And I asked her, you know, and she said, that's a true story from someone. And I said, really? She planned the baby. Baby came out of love, a marriage, but for some strange reason, she just never fell in love with her child.
That's kind of a bizarre take it on
is.
Postpartum depression, maybe?
It is. That's what I thought. And then it started percolating, and I said, wow, people don't really discuss this. They don't discuss all these random feelings.
Well, certainly these negative ones.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. so I started just asking questions from my own family. It's like, oh, how did you feel when you were pregnant or what happened? And I felt like I was kind of invited into the secret society because all of a sudden, now that I've had a baby, sisters, cousins were confiding in things that I never knew they went through because you don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's a Latino cultural aspect, a generational aspect. Like, I have no idea where that comes from because I've always been kind of vocal about everything in my life.
And open.
And they...
So you were maybe an anomaly in your family?
Oh, completely. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. A little firecracker.
And so you were shocked?
Oh, completely shocked. And I thought, your stories have to be told. And I spoke to them, and slowly I said, you know, I sent out emails. I think I'm working on something. I don't know what it's going to be, but do you mind if I interview you? Or you can even answer these questions on an email at your own leisure. Or how do you feel? And some of them talked to me so openly and honestly. And some even said, you don't have to change my names. Others wanted me to change my name.
But you started only with people who you knew.
Only people who I knew. And then it's slowly, like this last one, to elongate the play now for the production we're doing, we made it longer. I interviewed people I've never met because I was searching for a certain type.
So who did you meet? And why do you call it confessions in the sense that is, were all of them that personal or that maybe bleak or sad, or were some of them feeling the same way you were?
They were feeling the same way I was. I called it confessions because I don't think of confessions as something as bleak, sad. I just call it as like an opening of your soul,
okay,
letting it out.
Good point, right.
And I found that some of that I've met enlightened me completely.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Lorraine Rodriguez-Reyes. She is an actress and a producer who has appeared on stage, television, and film. So tell us about some of these women who you're channeling.
Well, I don't really quite channel them. I like to say I take their energy and their essence.
Mm-hmm. Well, you bring their stories to life.
I bring their stories to life in the way I perceive it. One of the women I found amazing, she went through such a horrendous miscarriage and the situation, because it actually happened in her office, in her job, and her supervisor didn't care. It's like, that's not my problem.
That his employee was having a miscarriage in the office?
Completely.
Okay.
And it was so sad, but to see her strength and the way she discussed it and how she came to terms with it and said, okay, this is what I need to do to move forward, because she was already past 40, so she couldn't, this was her last chance. And when she spoke to the doctors and she thought about, you know, like freezing her eggs, like I would have never thought of half the concepts that people were telling me about of what they do trying to get pregnant or hold their eggs, freeze their eggs, you know, artificial insemination or, you know, IVF, in vitro. You don't sit there. It's like normally, like there's a thermometer, I'm ovulating, let's go. Mm-hmm. So I didn't realize there was all these other facets. And one, it educated me to do more research. Two, to be more empathetic, to completely be extremely empathetic towards people, because we don't know their situation and how it also carves into their personality. Because there were certain folks that I thought, wow, you have a little edge on your shoulder. Mm-hmm. But once I learned their story, it's like, oh, you haven't healed. I get it.
So these are real stories.
Yes.
That have your imprimatur on it, so to speak.
But it's not like a caricature. It's not.
Not, of course, not.
Some of them are very minute details, maybe in a dialect, but not a strong dialect, or maybe a cadence, or the way I walk, or the way my body just moves. But I use my story as the through line to take you through the journey. So my story being part of my pregnancy, how my life started, and the trials and tribulations and fears. Because with my daughter, we had a scare where we thought we lost her when I was almost a month from my due date.
So you started off being so excited about being pregnant and how this was changing your life. And so, yes, it wasn't just a straight line from conception to birth.
No.
You had your share of drama as well.
Yes, completely, with my second birth, my second child.
When did you actually finish this show and start performing it? After your second child was born or before?
Way after my second child.
This had been percolating for quite some time. You were amassing research, I guess, so
completely
to speak. Okay.
It started when I was pregnant with my son, and he's
your
three
first,
now,
right?
My first. So that was 3 years ago I started writing my own stories.
So do us a favor and take on the persona of one of your women.
Okay. After I had my son, I took every Latina's advice and went to Third Avenue in El Barrio and bought myself a faja. Little did I know that this experience would lead to lifelong advice for mother and a child. Ay, mija, how can I help you? Oh, you need a faja. Oh, you just had a baby. Ay, que varón, que lindo. Que Dios te lo bendiga. A ver, okay, I will help you. The kind that buttons up or the bodysuit? Oh, let's see. Turn around. You're my size. Clearly, she's much bigger than me. A small button-up faja. A ver. Okay, no, you put it on. See, no, at first, you can't breathe, okay? But you put your tetas up like this. You look very sexy. Look at me. Look at me. My waist is so small. I look like I'm 18. Oh, see. You had the baby when? Ah, no, la semana pasada. Oh, no. You have to wear this faja y no te la quites o te va a quedar gorda. No. Let me give you a piece of advice, okay? Do you want to keep your husband and your babies happy? Huh? Nunca lo niegues, okay? You always give them a canto. Make sure you take a bath every night before you go to bed, okay? You want her to smell like flowers and taste like chuleta. Sí. And you know, you want to stay young. Always young, ponte linda. Look at me, look at me. Guess how old I am, huh? Guess. I'm 48 years old. Ah, yes. Ah, I'm sexy and fantastic. Look at my tetas. My nalgas are nice. I've been married 20 years. I have 5 kids and my husband never cheated. Uh-huh. Look at my husband over there. Qué lindo, right? Qué chulo. He still got it.
Who is she?
This is the faja lady, I call her.
And faja means what?
Faja is a girdle. And in our culture, the minute you have a child, you get a girdle and you put it on. And that's exactly what they did to me. I had my son and my mother brought me a faja, but it wasn't a very good one. So they sent me to Third Avenue in El Barrio, which is Spanish Harlem. And there's a place that sells them. And they sell all kinds, the full bodysuit, the button. So this was my experience with this woman when I first went in for my faja after
so
I had
this
my son.
Is you.
This is me with my experience to her. So that was her talking to me.
I understand.
And I gave them all their their names. So I called her Doña Carmen, the faja lady, even though that's not her name. But
right.
When you meet her, she is a trip. And it's all about... For her, it was just the advice of after motherhood, how to look sexy, how to be beautiful, because you don't want your husband to cheat on you. Like, that's all she kept focusing on when I purchased my girdle. And I thought, what about advice for my son? And she's like, if you have your husband at home, then you have a happy house. Like, it was very interesting to see her point of view on marriage, on babies, on life. And it was kind of sad.
Weren't you pissed off that you had to go there, that your mother wanted you to go there? Or was this just a typical rite of passage?
I think it was a rite of passage, but I also didn't want to stay with the belly. And I see with some of my family members that when they did the girdle, it brought everything back in, including your intestines, and you weren't all out.
So it works.
It does. It works. It's painful, but it works. And even the doctor told me when I went in, I said, I had the baby and I went in for the 30-day checkup and I said, you know, my mom wants me to wear a girdle. Is this safe? And she goes, girl, you should have put that on like right after you had him.
Really?
It's like, really? And she goes, you didn't have a C-section. It brings all your intestines back in. It helps you bring. I would have never thought that.
So that little vignette that you did was a very personal one because
yes,
that was about you.
That was my experience after I had my son. So I went home and I remember, like, I wrote this down. I told my family. I was working as a producer at the time, so I showed up at the office and I was like, do you know what just happened to me? And I went off and my friend says to me, I recorded you here. Write this down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that one's a very personal one.
What has the response been like to the show?
It's been very overwhelmingly positive. I put myself out there. It was one of those things where Veronica contacted. She sends a mass email out. You know, I'm accepting applications. And I thought, maybe, maybe not, maybe. And I wrote, I said, listen, it's really raw. I'm working with a dramaturg. I don't even have an arc for the show. It's just raw interviews at this time. Should I apply or should I wait till next year? And she'll send it. I sent it in. I received a letter of acceptation, an acceptance letter. And I thought, wow.
And so under whose auspices is Mommy Confessions produced or shown?
It's Caicedo Productions and TTO Entertainment do mm-hmm. the actual, the one festival it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just myself kind of doing
right.
the rest of it, hiring
right.
the director on my own. I call it the family production company that we're actually taking money out to hire the director, the dramaturg, to work out the kinks mm-hmm. and do all of that.
Can you see yourself taking this all over?
I would love to.
To go on the road?
I would love to. I'm actually going on the road later on next year in Ithaca, New York. So that's my first tour.
That's terrific.
It's very exciting.
So there's a lot of good stuff in your future, right? In addition to being a mom and moving to Atlanta,
yes.
which I'm sure might be an interesting thing for you to do on stage, coming from New York City and going to Atlanta, and we don't want to insult anybody
no.
in Atlanta.
It's just a different lifestyle.
Oh, there you go. There's a diplomat for you.
It's a different lifestyle. I'm a pedestrian. I'm used to the energy in New York. It's so palpable that you can't replace that anywhere. And even just coming back, you have a newfound appreciation when you don't live here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I walk through 42nd Street. It's like, oh, she's singing still. Oh, yes, they're playing over here. Oh, hi.
It's terrific. Lorraine, it was really a pleasure to meet you. It sounds like you've had a wonderful past, a fabulous present, and there's going to be great things in your future,
Thank
too.
Thank you so much, Sandy. It was lovely being here.
Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at the 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.